rock climate change rock star. That is Auden Schendler. Don't know if you've heard his name before, but he is Vice President of Sustainability at the Aspen Ski Company. He's author of a book called Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution. He's also previously a sustainability researcher at the Rocky Mountain Institute right there in the Aspen area, and he currently serves on the board of Protect Our Winters and was named a global warming innovator by Time Magazine back in 2006, and that's about when I last spoke to you, Auden Schendler, when I was doing Eco Talk on Air America. Welcome back to the program, now called The Green Front.
Good to be back.
And glad to hear you have some white on the brown front there in pretty parched Colorado. And we're about to get some precipitation in very dry California in the next 24 hours as well. So let's start with the good news. Finally, winter is acting like it's supposed to, but no fault of Mother Nature's. It's us who's fueling her, of course. But we'll get to that in a minute. But first, you say you have had some snowfall?
Yeah, we got about 14 inches over the weekend, and I'm going to go out after this call and sample the product.
Make a snowman.
It could be good. Yeah, no ski on it.
Ski on it. Enough to ski on. Great. Well, a lot of Californians have been heading for Colorado and Utah thinking there'd be more snow there, but was not the case. We had that front that was moving everything up to Alaska where they don't need more snow, and so things have finally look like they're normalizing a bit. But, of course, that's just short term. That's just the weather. Climate-wise, we are in trouble, and as you say in a fabulous article just published on the Atlantic.com website, you can find it, the headline of that story, another year goes by and we're no closer to solving climate change. So here we are at the beginning of 2012, 2011, of course, being a banner year for, deadly and devastating and destructive storms and droughts and fires across the United States just alone. With some 12, billion-dollar disasters alone in the year 2011, you think that would have awakened the slumbering masses and put the climate rhymes with masses, to shame? And yet, that's not the case. What are we still facing, and why, Auden?
Well, if you read the what's changed in the last probably decade is if you read the climate science, the tone of that. Is getting increasingly dire. You have our best climatologists who have always been kind of quiet, socially awkward scientists are now becoming activists. And these are people who are the most respected climate scientists in the world, James Hansen at NASA, Lonnie Thompson at Ohio State, Richard Alley at Penn State, saying, look, we have a serious problem that if we don't move on, we're going to face real challenges. And in the ski industry, this should seem obvious, but even in our business, it hasn't been seen as necessarily job one for the trade groups to focus on solving climate from a policy perspective, purely as a business move.
As a survival move, but you've been in the forefront of that. You saw this coming years ago.
Well, yeah, and if you've, been in the environmental field, it's been around this issue. I took my first course in climate science 20 years ago, and it said exactly what we're seeing today, pretty much the same thing. So we've asked the question, well, if you were a ski resort and you actually cared about both the environment purely from ethical standpoint but also from staying in business standpoint, what would you do? And the answer historically has been, well, we've got to change light bulbs and build green buildings and so forth. And we've done all that. But if you really look at the challenge of solving climate change, you're not going to get there by having individual businesses do voluntary carbon reduction. So we said, look, let's step back and ask what our big leverage opportunities are. And it turns out that Aspen has a huge soapbox, gets covered in the press, has very influential visitors, and if we want to do something big, we can actually influence policy by talking about and becoming activists on a range of climate policy issues. So we've been to Washington to try to influence Congress. We have testified to Congress. We've filed an amicus brief on Massachusetts versus EPA, which is really de facto climate legislation that the Supreme Court ruled on. So that's where we've been focusing over the last few years, and we'll continue to do more of that.
And since you have been on this for so many years, on, have you noticed any shift in the political climate when you do go back to D.C. to testify? I mean, in many ways, things have gotten worse, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, what maybe has shifted is that we were just in D.C. in the fall, and we didn't run into a whole lot of flagrant denial. We met with very polite and friendly people, but when we met with the supporters of legislation, they said, don't meet with us, meet with the opposition. And when we met with the opposition, they said, hey, in one case, Murkowski's office said, we believe the science, but look at our state. Everything is fossil fuel based, and it's, you know, this is our industry. It's hard to get in the way of that, which is what they perceived climate action would do. So you really are at an incredible impasse now, more than ever.
More than ever, that's right. And in a fabulous article that I enjoyed as well, cannot recommend it highly enough, Naomi Klein's recent article in The Nation, where she points out quite poignantly that it's not that the climate message didn't get out or that it failed, actually that it got through too clearly. Kind of sickening when you read about, and I believe she's correct, just the sinister motivations, really when it comes down to it, I guess it's mostly greed on the part of those who would keep business as usual, those who have a, you know, bigger interest in the fossil fuel industry than apparently life on the planet.
Yeah, you know, Naomi Klein's article was fascinating. Essentially, it said that the right got what it would mean. They understand climate science and got what it would mean to solve it, which is basically rewriting capitalism as we understand it. So you don't want to do that, so don't do it. But, you know, one of the points I made in my Atlantic article was a more generous and perhaps forgiving to the right or to the climate denial community, which is essentially saying, hey, look, these people aren't necessarily sinister or bad people, but they're making this calculation of saying, hey, by liquidating all the carbon, natural carbon, coal and oil, there are benefits to that, and they're weighing those benefits against the challenges resulting from climate change. So I just take a less kind of these people are evil perspective and more, hey, we have a severe structural problem with capitalism, which is that it's never been we've never practiced capitalism. It's never weighed the impacts of externalities.
The environment's never been factored in, and so we have this, as you say, Gordian knot, where we don't seem to have progressed very far. We seem to be, as you said, more of an impasse than ever. And what do we need? We need Midas to come along and cut the rope?
Well, Midas didn't cut it, but he tied it. You know, Alexander the Great cut it, and I use that analogy just as a way to say we have to think about this problem in an entirely different way. Let me give you an example. In the ski industry, when you talk about climate change, people often think it's not going to snow. Well, if you look at the science, it's not entirely clear. You might actually see bigger, nastier storms in a shortened season. So you might have more snow in a climate-changed world. But maybe lack of snow isn't the real threat to us. If you look at the hurricane that hit the East Coast this summer and then flooded Vermont, it destroyed the base lodge at Killington Ski Resort, and it destroyed a lot of the highways that go to the resort. Well, no one in our industry said, yeah, we got to worry about climate change, and the reason is we got to worry about catastrophic infrastructure impacts from flooding. Wow. So it's a whole different perspective on how climate might affect skiing.
Did you say that was a wake-up call, or it still was not, even though that happened?
Oh, it's not. I mean, it was a wake-up call to me, but I don't think people – I think people continue
dots.
To fail to put two and two together.
So will it take, you know, for Manhattan to be underwater to wake up America? Why was the incredible year we just saw of extreme weather devastation not enough?
Well, you know, maybe it is going to take that. You know, before – environmental clean air and clean water legislation was passed in the U.S., things got pretty nasty. I remember people telling me about swimming in the Mississippi River and having tar balls all over their hair when they came out, and that was the way it was. And then the Cuyahoga River caught fire and so forth. So things have to get pretty bad before we take action. I think the good news there is that when you do take action, often things can move pretty quickly.
And what are you doing there in Aspen to educate locals, maybe some visitors, since you do have such influential residents and tourists and skiers who come through? Because let's face it, I mean, those who are jetting in and out of Aspen and have homes there have a pretty large ecological footprint compared to the average American.
Right. That's a tough question of how do you reach all the guests that are coming in? And what we've tried to do is make it so that when you come here, you can't help but notice what we're doing environmentally, but also get a message on climate as well. So an example would be in the old world, we have a hotel, and we put solar panels on the hotel. Well, in the old school kind of environmentalism, that's what you did. You put the panels up, it costs money, it generates some clean power, though not a lot, and you're doing the best you can. But we realized that was really meaningless. And what we did instead is we tied those panels to our biggest suite. And so we spot metered that suite. So there's a widget on the computer screen in the suite that shows how much energy is being produced by the panels and how much energy the room is using. So you have this message on energy use and climate there because it's broken down into dollars and CO2 in the room where very influential people are staying. And so you're targeting your guest more than you are just making a statement on the roof. So we have a range of approaches that are trying to think kind of deeply about what really matters and what we really should be doing versus what we're expected to do on the environment.
And have you been successful at converting many of your cohorts, management at Aspen and perhaps Vail and other, you know, high-end ski areas around, you know, the basin there?
I don't think the ski industry as a whole has radically understood climate. If it did, our trade associations would have lobbying on climate in D.C. as a number one priority, but it's not even close to that. So where we've been successful internally, say, is, you know, after 10 years of working on this, we no longer have resistance internally. We spend, you know, $1 million a year on energy efficiency retrofits. Our CEO has gone to Washington 3 times. Everyone's on board. So that internal cultural resistance is gone. But other interesting things have happened. We're privately owned as a company, and the family that owns us over the last decade has become increasingly mobilized on addressing climate change, both from an education and policy perspective, but also from an operational angle. So that's a big lever.
Hmm. Don't you have something interesting going on with people who want to build homes in Aspen, something about they have to be responsible for the energy needs?
That's not our program, but the city of Aspen passed one of the first carbon taxes in the U.S., and it was called the REMP, or Renewable Energy Mitigation Program. So if your house uses more than a certain amount of energy, you have two choices. You either have to put in renewable energy systems, or you have to pay into a fund that then can support other energy efficiency programs or renewable energy.
That's innovative. What kind of response? Did that have any kind of operant conditioning benefit that you could track or that you
You know, ideally the program is designed to force people to build more efficiently. I think it's done that less well, but what it has done is it's educated people, and two, it's created a multi-million-dollar fund that essentially creates an offset fund. So you can, you know, that fund has funded clean energy development. It's funded efficiency retrofits, light bulb changeouts, and so forth. So, and the other interesting piece of that is when you come to people and say, hey, you got to pay into this if you don't want to do your renewable energy system, a lot of people are happy to do it because they felt bad about their energy use anyway. So it's a step forward. It's not perfect. Aspen certainly uses a ton of energy and has big houses. But what Aspen can do is model progressive programs for the rest of the world. And the reason it can do that, it has the time, it has the money. And so we have been pushing that as a community and as a business.
Mm-hmm. And you really have been a pioneer in your field, in your industry. And was it a course you took 20 years ago? That's when you first kind of keyed in on to what was coming?
No. Basically, everything that happened here came from basically management thinking about these challenges and trying and failing. You know, we only got to where we are today, which is an understanding that look, we're going to do a lot of energy efficiency, boiler and light retrofits and green buildings. We've got 4 LEED certified buildings here. But that we need to be politically active. It all came on the ground. We'd do stuff, and then we'd look at the science and the politics and say, we got to do more. And then we'd try to do more and got to this point of needing to find really big levers to drive the biggest possible scale change.
And do you get managers from other ski areas around the country, I hope, coming to visit to see what you have created there as a model?
We do, but, you know, to be honest, the interest is more from the broader corporate world. And so we do a lot. I talk to business schools. I talk to other corporations about what we're doing and our approach. And the difference, I think, between what other people have done and what we've done is that if you talk to corporate America about their sustainability programs, they're all doing great, and they cut emissions X, and it's a huge success. Well, we've been trying for years to cut our emissions in an energy-intensive business and made very limited progress, even though we're growing. And we've been incredibly honest about the difficulty of reducing CO2 emissions, of achieving success on any project, whether it's a lighting retrofit or a boiler retrofit. So we've been painfully transparent. And the reason we've done that is we think people need to understand the barriers and challenges before they can go forward. Now, that's been painful because it makes us look like, to some extent, because we're not spinning it, it looks like we're not as successful as the others who are spinning it. But we don't care because, in reality, no one's succeeding on this.
Good for you. And no one's going to succeed with a, you know, ski resort if we don't have snow. Let's sort of get back to the basics, back to Mother Nature, because up at Lake Tahoe over the Christmas holiday, we happen to have a timeshare up at North Star on the North Shore, and Vail, the owners of Vail have come in, East West Property, and built, you know, just lots of condominiums. Took years. There was a lot of opposition, but they, you know, were successful. And so now there's a lot of empty condos that nobody can afford to buy, and, you know, at least over the Christmas break, there were very few skiers. Because there was very little snow, they were able to make a lot, but boy, that's very energy intensive. And something about skiing on manufactured snow just did not lure me out there every day, especially with lift prices almost $100 a day. So that's really, you know, what it comes down to. The ski industry has no future if there isn't enough natural white stuff, and we may have, you know, years where there's a bounty, like last year there was a, you know, so much snow, but if you can't count on it from year to year being at least somewhat normal, then what kind of future do you have?
Right, I think this season may provide some level of wake up to the industry, because what it showed is, well, what if your weather changes as a result of long-term climate trends and you can't ski at certain times of year that you would always expect to ski? That's not just an impact to your ski resort. It actually impacts real estate, as you describe. It affects hotels, it affects restaurants and bars, and that in turn affects people's lives and whether they have jobs and whether they can pay for their kids in college and so forth. So you have these pure climate-based communities all over the West and actually all over the country, the Northeast too, that absolutely depend on not tons of snow but stable climate.
Yeah.
And as things get increasingly erratic and unpredictable, this year is a good example of what happens to economies when climate doesn't cooperate.
Absolutely, and like you said, there is a whole resort economy that, you know, depends on the summer and winter seasons, very slow during the spring and fall, up at Tahoe being an example of that. And when the snow doesn't come and the people don't come and they don't buy timeshares and they don't buy, you know, things in the ski shop and go to the restaurants, people go out of business. There's just been an incredible turnover, and I really shudder to think what's going to be for this year, because they missed the lucrative, you know, Christmas break and also just missed the Martin Luther King weekend. We get a ski week in February, and hopefully there'll be plenty of snow for that, but still it's a lot to recover from. And it's got to be chilling just for anyone paying attention to see, you know, is there going to be more of this? And yet we all must be doing everything we can, and it still won't be enough. And, of course, as a country, you know, certainly our leadership, you know, government, business, we're not doing everything we can. We're still kind of asleep at the wheel. But I thank you for doing everything that you can in your industry to wake up the slumbering masses or the visiting guests at Aspen and the environs there. It's no small task, but it seems like you've kind of gotten religion, if you will, and really are passionate about this, and I thank you for that passion.
Yeah, thank you. What's encouraging is that if you look at the really famous people in the ski industry, the professional athletes, all of them, with almost no exceptions, are concerned about climate change and are becoming activists on it. And they're being united by a group called Protect Our Winners. ProtectOurWinners.org is the website that is essentially trying to mobilize this industry. And the winter sports business is $66 billion in the U.S. So it's sizable, and these people are famous, so there is awareness on that end, and I think that's the big lever of this business. I mean, the pro athletes are as famous as anyone in Hollywood, and they have huge reach to an activist, youthful audience.
And Hollywood comes to you, I'm sure, a lot during the winter, so good connection there. I'm glad you don't have to, you know, spew any CO2 and get on a jet to reach the powerful. Of course, they're on their private jets coming to you, but you're doing what you can, and that's all any of us can do. And I thank you again for your great work, and recommend the article and the book as well. Again, the name of the article is Another Year Goes By, and We're No Closer to Solving Climate Change. That was published in The Atlantic last month. And then also the book is called Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Line to the Sustainability Revolution. Auden Chandler is my guest. He's been out there on the green front lines. And this is The Green Front. When we come back, we're going to get an update on breaking news on the State Department expecting to announce today that it cannot recommend going forward with the proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline. We'll talk to someone from 350.org, as well as our friend D.R. Tucker, to do a little analysis of this. We'll even hear from Al Gore. So don't go away. We'll be right back.